All right, Quinn is going to try and intro this best of. Quinny, no, do it. Just remember what we rehearsed. Do it.
It's the rerun.
This is the rerun.
The rerun, because Bailey's just have her puppy right now.
Yeah, this is a rerun. Happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day.
We'll be back tomorrow.
You'll be back tomorrow.
We'll all be back tomorrow. All right, we'll fix that in post. Have a great Labor Day. We'll see you tomorrow. Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 6th of August 2021. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Happy anniversary for the bombing of Hiroshima. Yeah, that's right. It's the anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima back in 1945. I don't know how many years that makes it, but it's an odd number. I don't know why I know that either, but I just knew that. All right, action-packed program. It is the day you have. We are the ones we have been waiting for. This is the day we have been waiting for. It's the day we talk to Paul from China. That's right, an American in China. As for the deal, what the deal is with iTunes, I don't know what the hell the deal is with iTunes, unless you've got a billionaire patron or a mega corporation building up your brand. You cannot apparently upload a podcast to iTunes. I don't know why. It says that the show isn't even available in the U.S. or something. Allegedly, people are working on it. Hopefully, by the time you see this, it will be fixed because it sucks. And same goes with like Chris DeGaulle's podcast. There's a whole bunch of people like, oh, sorry, this is not available in the U.S. I'm like, I know it's available in the U.S. I'm in the U.S. and I've subscribed to it. So I don't know what the hell the problem is, but they're allegedly working on it. So there you go. Sorry, I've gotten your emails. I've responded to them. It is showing up everywhere else. So find alternative means, I guess, because you're going to, well, even if you're listening to this, you found it. So what the hell do I know? And maybe it's fixed. You're going to want to hear today's program. It is Paul in China. It is an interesting, he works in the amusement park industry. It's not, like a carny or anything. He's actually involved in building and maintaining them, the engineering of them. So he's working over in China, and he listens to this show on occasion, and he was kind enough to come on the show a year or so ago to find out tell us what life was like in China right as the pandemic was kicking off and the lockdowns and everything. And now it's a year later, more than a year later, and he was kind enough to come back and tell us what it's like now. And it's different. And then we get into other things, the Olympics, we get into Biden, we get into Trump and who they took more seriously and just all sorts. It's a very interesting conversation. Basically, the gist of it is China is paying attention to us, whether we're paying attention to them or not. And we really should be paying attention to them because they're coming for us. Not maybe necessarily in the way you might think when you hear that, but they're coming for us in a way that might matter just as much. So check that out. You're going to get to it right about 30 seconds. But first, let me tell you about Ancient Life Oil for all your CBD needs. AncientLifeOil.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get free fast shipping. Great deals this month. Huge sale. So go to AncientLifeOil.com. Check it all out. Throw it all in your cart. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on top of everything else. All right. Let's get to it. Oh, yes. And don't forget about the Curse Program, the Week in Evan Review. News talked about the way it deserves to be talked about. Every Saturday morning at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. $5 a month for the love of God. And like I said on yesterday's show, which you may or may not have heard, since Quinn and Bailey helped kick it off. Yeah. I got like $1,700 in bills from the hospital to because of Quinn's trip to the emergency room and the 4 days or whatever drama that we went through. So subscribe to the patreon.com/Derek Hunter podcast page. Be generous, because damn. Anyway, it's worth it. It's worth it. You got to pay those bills. Okay. Without any further ado, I give you Paul. And we did this via Skype, and it was there's technical issues. It sounds fine. It just might sound a little muffled, but you'll be able to understand us both. So here is Paul in China. All right, ladies and gentlemen, he's probably the most inquired about guest we've ever had on the program. And it's because we talked to him just over a year ago, maybe a little more than a year ago, right when all this pandemic business started. And he was in China, and he was witnessing it firsthand. And so it was wildly, and unlike most of the other episodes of this program, it was wildly informative. And as such, I thought, wow, we should try to have him back. But of course, since then, I'd left the Daily Caller, and he'd emailed me at the Daily Caller, so that email was gone. But then I figured out how to get it. I had an old phone with old Daily Caller emails on it. I found his email address, and I contacted him, and he's agreed to come back on. You call him Paul, because that's his name. Paul in China. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing well, considering, right now the United States is sort of backsliding a little bit. You're over there. You're probably not up on the news. The case numbers, they always say, well, they're up 200%, but it's gone from like 20 to 40. So it's like a little bit different. It's about the framing of it. But the CDC has instituted or suggested, since they don't have the power to actually institute anything, suggested going back to indoor masking in certain areas, and people are getting very upset about that, as you might imagine. But I'm reading in the papers about China having a problem. Now, for a year, it was China's got this thing licked. China, we should be more like China. Now I'm hearing that there are several cities over there where China is maybe having little difficulty with the Frankenstein's monster they unleashed on the world. What are you hearing inside of China? Are you is it where you are, and is it or are they reporting it if it isn't where you are?
They are reporting it, but it's what I'm hearing is it's very small. When I'm talking small, we're talking like two cases, and that if you go into that neighborhood, if you go into any of the area, what I'm hearing is basically in Beijing. And that in a specific area, in a specific neighborhood in Beijing. So if you go there, you run the risk of potentially having to quarantine if you are exposed to that area. But it's very different over here. I mean, it's settled into a sort of a normalcy much earlier than the United States. What you just told me, it just sounds like China well over a year ago. I think when we spoke, there was that kind of a reality. But I mean, really, from here, I've been maskless for over a year. We have to wear masks here in any public transportation. If you want to take a train or a plane go to a hotel and you check in, you have to wear a mask. Other than that, you don't have to wear a mask anywhere. So it's the idea, and we haven't had any cases at all. But in social media here, they'll basically publicize that a case has popped up here or popped up there, but it's really less than 5 typically.
Now, do they focus on the U.S.? Like, when it was really bad here over the winter, was the Chinese media kind of saying, well, the United States is not handling this well or anything like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. China focuses on all our foibles and our guffaws, everything that we do wrong. They just show it as they kind of laugh at it. And like, the guys don't know what they're doing. Absolutely.
And now they say 5 cases. We've got reports of more, but the people over there, there's a big debate and a big push here to investigate the origins of COVID-19, obviously. The story was, it came from a wet market. Somebody ate bat soup, and it just went from there. Then we found out that, there's that big COVID factory over there that maybe had something to do with it, might be worth looking into. And the Chinese government immediately got very defensive. Is there amongst the Chinese people that you deal with or the media that you consume over there any appetite or interest or curiosity about the origins of this thing?
To be honest, if I talk to Chinese people, no. They don't really have much of an appetite or care. If I talk to people who live here who are not, who are expats who live here, what I've been able to understand, what I've been able to figure out here is that the belief here is that the laboratory in Wuhan was a for-hire laboratory that was being used by Americans and Europeans, mainly Brits and Americans, who were using the lab to do work that they were not necessarily allowed to do in the United States. They were allowed to do that, or in Europe, they were allowed to do that here. And that the lab was being moved at the time that the thing escaped. So whatever they did during that time, the lab being moved, allowed this thing out. That's what I've gotten from people, that there was sort of, they're doing gain of function research over here, which basically, not necessarily weaponizing it, but messing with this coronavirus, which is the virus. So the corona strain has been around for about 20 years. And they were mess. I don't know why you would mess with this. I have no idea. But I guess it revolves around the idea that you can't necessarily copyright nature. You can't copyright a virus, and you can't copyright anything in China because there's no copyright laws here. So they moved the research to here, and something happened, and then they automatically blamed the wet markets.
So that's sort of the skinny. Is that coming from Chinese nationals or is that coming from expats? Because that's something that everybody here is denying. Dr. Fauci is running around saying, no gain of function, no nothing. And he sort of dances around and tries to use a thesaurus way of talking about gain of function without it, calling it actual gain of function. But it sounds to me like this is, at least the story you're hearing in China, is this was a mercenary factory. Come on, and you can experiment. You can try and crossbreed humans and animals. You can do, it's a free for all, and as long as you cut the check and it clears.
And I have not. Yeah, I have not been keeping up with the latest in the United States. So if that's what you're hearing in the United States, that's what I'm hearing in China. You know, do you remember back in the, I think it was the 80s, 90s, they had that Bhopal, India. There was a factory that was moved to Bhopal, and it had a leak, and it killed everybody in the village.
Union Carbide, right? Union Carbide.
That factory used to be in the United States. We outlawed what they could build, and they moved that factory to India, and that factory had a leak, and that killed a zillion people around that city. That's what people think happened here, that there was something being manufactured, not by China, just happened to be in China with a Chinese lab, but what was being manufactured was being done by Westerners, Brits and Americans, who had basically taken this virus, and I wouldn't say weaponized it, because I think if it was weaponized, we would have much more death. I think you wouldn't have a 97% survival rate. You'd
right.
have a 20% or 10%. It's not a weaponized virus. It's just somebody messed with this virus and it happened to get out. What I've been hearing is that the Wuhan lab was being moved at the time this thing got out. They were moving all the facilities to a different building, and it got out.
It's scary no matter what happens, because the concept of gain of function, if you think about it, your first pass, you go, that makes sense. You know, these things could evolve and we should be prepared for them. And then you go, well, maybe they won't evolve for 500 years. And I'd imagine that medicine would have advanced a little bit in 500 years. So maybe we shouldn't mess with this stuff. But, this doctors and God complexes or whatever they say. So that's fascinating to me. But the Chinese people really have no interest in any of this.
They have no interest in it, and I have to say, at a base level, I mean, the virus is—it's almost—we don't even think. I don't even think about it, to be honest. It's not in my daily life. I have to bring a mask with me everywhere I go, only because I take the subway every morning. And I have to show certain people and codes and things to get into certain stuff. But I just don't think about getting the virus. I don't think about getting it from somebody. I don't wear it on a daily basis. I go shopping. I walk around China. I come into my apartment. There's nobody. I don't worry about getting the virus or giving the virus or any of that stuff. It's not something that we deal with.
We've seen footage out of Asia forever because of the pollution that people wear masks all the time. And so is even just having a mask with you commonplace even before the pandemic?
Yes. Yeah, it's commonplace. It's absolutely commonplace. So yeah, most people do have it, but you know, before the virus, you would have a mask just if you were sick, right? Just for the concern for other people, you would wear a mask and you would cough into that mask. But you wouldn't always have a mask with you. But now you basically always have a mask sort of tucked into your pocket or your backpack, and you just pull it out when you go into a subway or if you go on a train or any kind of a. But even if you go in a taxi, the driver will tell you if he wants you to wear a mask. You better have a mask. Sometimes they'll kick you out. But typically, you don't have to have a mask on you even in taxis here. So it's not what.
Paul, when we were setting this up, you sent me a screen capture of a QR code on your phone. And it was a green QR code.
Yes.
It's half of it was written in Chinese, so I don't know what the hell it said. But the other half was written in English, and you explained what it was. We all know here about the social credit score in China for Chinese citizens. Tell us what this QR thing is and why, because you mentioned, you sort of just mentioned in passing, you might have to scan a code to get into places. Talk to people about what's going on over there as far as tracking and tracing and everything.
Yeah, so China is basically has been almost essentially a full cashless society for about 6 to 7 years. I mean, but 6 to 7 years ago and even before the virus, you can easily get by in China with cash. You know, you didn't have to have a phone. But typically what happens is you can sign up for one of two payment apps, is WeChat or Alipay. You can download these onto your phone, and you want to pay for something, you hit your WeChat thing and say, I want to pay, and you pops up this QR code, and the merchant will scan your code, and you just debit your account, right? No big deal. But as the became something that was, obvious and something we had to deal with here, they added an application to the app, a little function that said a health code. And so what you had to do now is that you had to show, what you do is when you want to go into a building, you hit the health function and your QR code would come up and pop up. You hoped it popped up green. If it popped up red, you were screwed. But it basically accesses your health code. And the people go, how can that be possible when China, because it's a nationalized system, they have access to your whole health record, they have access to your travel record, they have access to everything you've purchased. And so this thing pops up. So if you want to take a plane or a train, you want to get in Disneyland, you want to go into a hotel and stay the night, you have to go on to one of these payment apps, hit the health code, and watch this thing basically pop up. And if it pops up green, they typically take a photograph of your phone and the QR code and log it in and allow you to come in. If you don't have that, you cannot get in. So you have to have a phone and you have to have a QR code to be able to function now in China. So you have to, and it's funny because, even the homeless in China have QR codes.
How do they give them phones? They give them phones, or how does that work?
They register for a QR code, and so if you because no one has cash anymore, if a homeless person asks you for money, you have no money on you, so they have a they give you the QR code, scan your phone, and give them money.
That's horrifying. I suppose it works like automatic contact tracer. If it knows where you've been shopping, where you've been eating and everything, if somebody who turned red showed up at that restaurant at the same relative time you were there, would that turn your thing then red?
Potentially. What would happen is that if a person came in and turned up red, that person would probably be within pretty quick time would be whisked away by the health authorities. But then they would know who was in that general area, and they didn't have to test you and see if you had the virus or anything else. And then if you did, then of course you'd have an incident. That's what would happen.
Have you had any reds, any potential reds, any yellows?
I had a red because I had to leave the country and come back to China. So I had a red just because I was in a quarantine period. So they put me in a red until I, it was very interesting. The day I passed the quarantine time period, literally to the minute, the second I got past it, my code turned from red to green. But it was, you know, you don't want to show anybody that red code, but I was still in quarantine.
Now, last time we talked, you had just returned to China, and you explained the quarantine process for people traveling overseas, where you stayed in a hotel, they basically brought you your food, set it outside your door, and ran away. And if you left your room, there was going to be trouble. Now, since you've traveled since, has that changed at all?
That has not changed at all. Not at all. It's exactly the same way. Same exact way it is a year ago. Same.
Have you found, because you obviously you're an American, you're working over there in a very specific industry. I imagine you're not the only American over there working in this very specific industry. You work with expats, it sounds like, or around expats.
Right.
Are you finding that your employer or whomever, without giving it away, is having difficulty finding labor to come from overseas, expertise that obviously China doesn't have, and they have to import it?
Yeah. Big time. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a defined people. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just to get people over here, just to get visas, it's very, very, very hard. It takes months and months and months, which typically would take a couple of weeks, will take almost half a year. And then when you do get your visa to be able to come over from the United States to China, you have to find a lab that's going to be able to process your COVID tests. You need two COVID tests to be able to come over from the United States or any other country into China, and they have to be processed, and they have to be green, they have to be valid 48 hours. So you have to take, and you have to do all this stuff and do all of it within a 48-hour period to be able to come to China. So if anything expires before that, then you have to stop and retake the test and come back over. And the problem with that is that the flights are very limited. We were having a 300-seat jumbo jet with 50 people in it, and it only flies once a week. And so it's a bit of a, I don't want to do it again, to be honest. It's just a bit of a cluster. You have to.
How many times have you been back to the United States in the past year?
Just once.
So you haven't. Your family isn't there with you, are they?
They are not here with me, no.
So that's got to suck. That's got to be horrible. It's got to an awful situation.
Yeah.
On average, how many times would you go home throughout a year? On average, before this, how many times a year would you go home?
All the time. I would go all the time. I would go 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 times a year, absolutely. And now I can't go at all. I mean, it's like the last time I came. The reason I went back for the last time was my father passed away. I had to go back to the United States. And then, what would typically be a quick turnaround, it took 6 weeks to find a flight. So I was back in the United States for two months, and then I had a 3-week quarantine in China. And so, that's a long time to be away from a job. Luckily, I was able to do my job through conference calls, the average person can't do that. So, it puts a kibosh.
Yeah,
and my family can't visit me either. I mean, if they were to visit me, they'd have to find a flight that would be 3 to 4 times more expensive than typical. I mean, an economy seat to China is about $14,000, and then when you get here, it's a 3-week quarantine,
which I assume you have to pay for the hotel, and you can't even visit them then. Let me ask you this, Paul. Is it more difficult to get into the United States or get back into China? Because I'd like to at least think we have some protocols set up.
I think it's much easier still if you're an American. A Chinese person cannot go in the United States right now, although they've just loosened the visas for students. The average Chinese person cannot go to China at all. I mean, the Chinese person cannot go to the United States at all. It's easier for an American to come to China than the other way, but it's still expensive and it's time consuming.
And so, I don't know. So life over there for the people who are there is kind of back to normal, is what you're saying. Aside from not being able to travel internationally,
it's completely. That's true. Yeah, it's been back to normal for close to a year, I would say, to be honest. But yeah, everybody's traveling inside China. They're not leaving the country.
So, we've been, I mean, we've been,
you know, it's $1.3 billion.
Yeah. We've been fed a steady stream of what seems like Chinese propaganda by the U.S. media about how well China handled this. And I just thought, well, they're just regurgitating whatever the Chinese government says. You know, no cases. We've eradicated this. Good for us. Our vaccine is wonderful, even though it's about 50% effective. Was it bad there over the course of the year? Or is China so massive that if it's bad in one corner, you won't even notice it where you are? Like, I don't understand the logistics of what's going on over there.
To be honest, I still don't know a single person who's had COVID over here. And nobody I know knows anybody who's had COVID over here. And nobody, you know, so I know, like, I think I said this in the first time we talked, I have a friend of mine whose fiance was from Wuhan. She visited her family in Wuhan when the big outbreak happened. They quarantined her and would not let her leave for months. And then she finally did leave. She didn't know anybody who had the virus and didn't know anybody who died from the virus. Didn't know, you know, this is, it was, I don't know. I mean, my daughter had the coronavirus back in Virginia, and she had it for 3 days, had a mild headache, and that was it. You know, she didn't, it was kind of a minor thing. So I don't know what to think. The conspiracy, the Alex Jones person in me thinks terrible stuff about this.
Well, I think it's because there's a lot they're not telling us. I'll give you that, but I'm not willing to go full Alex Jones on it. This is nothing, but I mean, obviously, some people. My father has a friend who died, you know, but the thing is, it's so weird that it could just.
How old was he?
He was very old. He was in his 70s or 80s. Yeah. There's no question about that. But it's a matter of, is this the cause or was this the straw that broke the camel's back? We don't know. And sadly, our government doesn't seem all that interested in actually finding out. But then you see people, you know, 31-year-old. Dies. Did they have respiratory problems? Maybe, but still, they're 31 years old and they die, and it's sad because it wasn't of an asthma attack. It was of a virus that it was exacerbated because they had asthma.
Yeah.
So there's no concern over there. I want to shift gears with you, Paul, while we still got you, because there's a lot else going on with China. Right now, the Olympics are going on in Japan. Are you guys getting the Olympics unfettered over there?
I hate watching the Olympics in the United States with American TV because we always have we take these special interest stories, you know.
It's like watching American Ninja Warrior, where every athlete gets a half an hour profile that is supposed to make you cry, and then they go out there and 2 seconds later they're falling on their ass, and it's like, all right, well, that's over. Like, why did you waste a half an hour with the sad tale of woe about their great grandmother swimming over here from Europe or whatever? Like, just let me watch the competition.
Yeah, that goes, it was funny. So China doesn't do any of the sob stories, but China has certain sports where they expect to dominate, right? And some of these sports are like ping pong and judo and things like that, and where they're supposed to be in, you know, they're supposed to medal. And I think there was a loss of the U.S. women's team had a loss of. In soccer, and so a similar thing happened in China here too, to Japan, and to all the countries to lose to. Japan's not the country to lose. They really don't like Japan, and so it was a big national disgrace. So, you know, but yeah, we're getting it for sure over here.
How about? Because we're seeing a lot, there's a lot of controversy here with the NBA, and I don't know what the status of the NBA is within China, but there's a lot of problems here. Well, not a lot of problems, but there's a lot of rightfully pointing out that the NBA bows to Beijing, to just sucks up to China because it's such a huge market. And China is kind of going, well, we'll screw you over if you cross us. And so you get, you know, LeBron James talking about how awful he has it and people like him have it in the United States. Meanwhile, his shoes are made by slave labor. Is there any, have you noticed, is it a change in the past year or the way that the NBA has been covered? I don't want to get you into trouble in case some masters are listening, but by the way that the NBA has been covered?
Yeah. How do I explain this? Going back to the cell phone example, this is a really interesting thing about the way that corporations are dealt with in China. I don't know if this got any coverage whatsoever in the West, but there was a lot of Western clothing companies, for example, like H&M or Uniqlo, or a lot of these companies that make, you know, clothing lines. H&M is a big Swedish company. They got 500 stores here in China, and they just decided almost a year ago, that they were going to clamp down on they were going to boycott Chinese cotton in the Uyghur area of China in Xinjiang, the western port. And they were going to clamp down, and they're not going to buy any Chinese cotton. So China basically put out this bulletin saying, you know, through the social media, saying, don't patronize H&M, don't patronize Uniqlo. And they aren't. I mean, the Chinese people, you want to talk about a boycott. There was over 500 stores, and H&M did business. I mean, if you went into an H&M, typically in a mall in China, they're the anchor stores, and you would go into an H&M and it would be packed. It would look like you were in Christmas time, where you had a big long line, you had multiple tellers trying to get your money in, and now it's a ghost town, complete ghost town. So China's just saying, okay, you know what, they're not actually applying any pressure per se, they're just saying don't go to these stores, don't patronize these stores. And with these cell phones and with no cash, and everybody's paying with their cell phones, They give the Bank of China, all these banks, an algorithm that basically they don't have to monitor everybody. What they can do is monitor the bank records. So if you make a purchase at H&M, bing, it pops up on yourself. It pops up that you've made a purchase. And so no one does. No one purchases. I mean, if you go there, I've seen an H&M. I was staying at a hotel for a couple of months. There's an H&M at the bottom of my hotel. It's just a ghost town. I call it H&MT. And it's... it's gone. I mean, that's, and so the NBA, that's what the NBA is basically dealing with. It's the same pressure. If you cross us, if you say anything badly about us, we're just going to shut you out of this massive market. You know, the Major League Baseball is really huge here. I mean, you can't go more than 50 feet in a subway and not see somebody wearing a Yankees hat. There's huge stores where they sell nothing but Major League Baseball gear, and the NBA is big too. It's still big. If you go to the Decathlon, a lot of stores here, there's a huge NBA section, and people wear it. And Chinese love basketball. I mean, I've made it in the NBA. You know, the basketball courts here are probably more full with Chinese kids playing basketball than the United States. So yeah, they definitely have a way to be able to mess with people's buying power. In China, they really do boycott. I would be surprised if in the next 6 months you don't see pull all of their stores out because they're going to go bankrupt. I mean, 500 stores. I mean, there are, I think there's slightly more than 500 here. There's slightly. I think the U.S. is a quarter of their entire market share. I think H&M's, actually China's the other quarter, and the rest is scattered around the globe. But they're going to lose, you know, a quarter of the entire global market share here. Well, credit, because they want to boycott Uyghur China.
Credit to them for not caving and going, all right, fine, we take it back, we apologize, we'd now embrace slavery. Speaking of Uyghurs, it is still in the news here, thankfully, mercifully, and the Olympics coming up in China next year. There is a push here in the United States, and I assume and I hope the rest of the Western world to say, you know what, we're just not going to go as long as you're committing what we're calling genocide against the Uyghurs in China. Is there any Uyghur news spread in China aside from, you know, H&M, don't go to H&M because of they're lying about us?
Well, I this is one thing where it kind of irritates me about the Western media, because, I mean, genocide and, like, concentration camp to me are, like, really loaded terms. When I hear those terms, I'm thinking Nazi Germany. I'm thinking Gestapo finding a Uyghur guy in the street, grabbing his shoulders, putting him in the van, and then murdering him, right? That is not happening. That is just simply not happening. There's Uyghurs all over China. They're not just in Uyghurstan. There's Uyghur. China's a foodie culture, so every known for a certain cuisine. Uyghurs have their own cuisine, so they are, there's like Uyghur neighborhoods in every large city in China, and even some of the smaller cities. There's Muslims everywhere in China. The Uyghur Muslims are all over the place. I mean, I pass three or four Uyghur restaurants every time I go to work, and they're wearing their Muslim gear and their garb, and they aren't being persecuted. What is happening, and I think what Americans need to understand, is that it's not a concentration camp. It's not a genocide. What's going on, there's a faction within the Uyghur community that wants to split from China and create what they call it East Turkestan or Uyghurstan. They want to create an Islam.
So you're breaking up a little bit. You're breaking up a little bit. But they want to, you're saying that there's, it's a separatist movement.
Secessionist, you know, that is pulled up. There are some large camps in that area. No, there's no question about that. But they're essentially China's Guantanamo Bay on steroids. They just, in China, unfortunately, their version of, you know, they don't have Black's Law and Anglo-Saxon Law. You're guilty until proven innocent. So they just, if you know somebody who committed terrorism, they're going to put you in the camp and try to figure out whether you're connected or not, and then take you out. But they're not murdering you. You know, they're not genociding you. You know, they're not killing you off. That's a loaded term to me. So it is Guantanamo Bay, but it's Guantanamo Bay without any kind of Nuremberg trial laws. There's nothing. You know, you have to be.
So you're stuck there. You're stuck there until maybe you get out, but you probably won't.
Maybe, yeah. I you know, there. But you know, the problem is with, and it's a legitimate criticism of China. If you are caught murdering somebody in the name of a free Uyghurstan, they're gonna assume, the Chinese government's going to assume that people that you know, people you're related to, are also guilty. So they're gonna incarcerate those people too. They're gonna incarcerate your parents, your brothers, your sisters, everybody, and they put them in jail and try to figure out who actually is innocent afterwards.
Yeah, but I don't. Well, they really even give a damn who's actually innocent afterwards? Are they really going to set this power of the state to determine whether or not you're innocent? I know. I think they drag their time. But let me ask you something
it's
else.
Pretty tough.
Let me ask you something else, Paul, that I've seen over here, and maybe, like, you work with a bunch of expats, and you roll with a bunch of, I assume you see a bunch of expats, whatever. I imagine there's a thriving expat community. You sort of alluded to that. Are there any black expats living over there that you've seen?
Not as many as there used to be. Prior to the virus, there's quite a few, but there's a lot less, yeah.
Because I've seen a lot of footage of malls, certain stores or whatever, where people, black people try to walk in. I don't know if they're Americans or they're from Africa or what, but they try to walk in with their Chinese friends or their white friends, and their friends are allowed in. But the signs say clearly in Chinese, I assume, I'm taking their word for what the signs say, that no black people are allowed in there. Is that something you've seen?
I've never seen that. I did see that was going on during the virus times here, where they were the Chinese government was blaming all the virus upticks on foreigners, and they were saying that it was being brought in by foreigners, and so they were using it as a pretext to sort of clear out neighborhoods of mainly Africans. I wouldn't say African Americans or Europeans, of black Europeans. They were not necessarily messing with them, but definitely African people. But I haven't seen that in the last year.
Have you been treated differently during the you've been there for years on and off. Have you been treated differently during the pandemic as an American?
As a foreigner, yeah, they wouldn't necessarily care where I came from, but I'm very obviously not Chinese. I'm a big blonde guy, and I mean, I think I might have mentioned this the last time I talked to you, but I was not allowed to stay at certain hotels. It just flat out, they would not let me stay because I was foreign at certain hotels. I mean, even if I had the green code, even if I had showed all the stuff, even I had never left China, they would not let me stay there. There were certain stores like that. That has all kind of gone away. But for a fair amount of months, probably about 6 months, it was like that, where, you know, I had to call ahead first and say, you know, will you accept foreigners? And,
And they were honest with you? No, yes, no, yes, no. And how about
the
people,
no.
How about the people you worked with, the Chinese people you've known? Did they treat you any differently?
No, they're fine. They're really great. Most of those people, most people who work with foreigners, most of them have worked over or lived or worked overseas themselves. Typically, not all of them, but most of them, and so they're a little more hip internationally than the locals. So they get it. You know, they understand.
And so I guess in sum, as we wrap it up here, what do you want people to know? Or what do you think the popular misconception is? Because I'm not really sure how, like you say, you're busy, you're working. Obviously, you're working on a 12-hour different schedule, so you can't really keep up with the news very easily here. But if you really wanted to, can you access the New York Times, the NBC News, FoxNews.com? Can you get to pretty much everything? You can?
I can get any of it. Yeah, most Chinese people that I know, virtually everybody has a VPN, a virtual private network. You load that onto your phone, and that gives you full access. Most Chinese people I know have more social media than I do. I mean, they have Facebook accounts and Instagram accounts, and they have, you know, they access YouTube, and they can access all this stuff.
How is that safe in a country where they want to track you, where they have the app with the QR code that does track you, and then everybody goes, well, but I'll just download a VPN? Like, I think that if anybody could get around that, it would be the Chinese Communist government that controls the entire network. And people just kind of go willy-nilly? Just go, oh, whatever, I'll take the chance.
Yeah, they do. They just take the chance. Yeah, I think what the Chinese the algorithms that they're looking for the anomalies. I think they're looking for people who are thinking of that next step. They're not, you know, they're not really focused on you unless you make yourself visible, and then they focus on you. But for the most part, I mean, it's fairly innocuous for the most part. Yeah, I mean, China's just a different. Just a different country. I hard to explain to people. You know, they the background where it comes from. You know, they don't crave Jeffersonian democracy, and they don't crave it. They don't feel like they're being persecuted or being subjugated. They don't feel like they're missing out by missing. When they turn on Western media, they get what they see in the West and what they see with BLM and, you know, the big transsexual drag queen story hours. And they show all this stuff over here, and they just laugh at it and go, what are you guys doing? You know, because they are a serious country over here. I hate to say that. I mean, a lot of people think I'm drinking the Kool-Aid when I say, you know, when I'm sort of defending China. It's like, I'm not defending China. I'm just telling you, this is the way it is. You know, I mean, like, Chinese people, Asian people in general in the United States get the rap of being like the smart kids in the school. Right, you know, they're the ones that score the good scores in the SAT, and they're the ones that, you know, and I think there's 3% of California is Asian, but 60% of the college population is Asian. Just imagine an entire country of those people. That's what this is over here. This China is a serious country. The people are serious here. They're all bilingual. They are very smart. They're very focused. They are. To be honest, at a familial level, they are very conservative people. You know, they're not communist. People, I know you see CCP and you'll see the hammer and sickle. They are not communist. They're probably closer to fascist is probably the better term for them. But what I'm worried about as an American is I'm worried that America's not ready. We're going to get steamrolled by China. I think we're not ready for the 21st century. Our current crop of kids and our current crop of politicians is not ready for China. China is a serious country. They are not. They don't have all these. You know, with a one-party system, they don't wake up in the morning and have any discussions whatsoever. They don't worry about the craziest stuff that's going on. They don't have any of the stuff going. They're very focused. They wake up in the morning and there's no weird politics and, you know, some crazy politician saying some weird stuff, and, you know, the Facebook isn't blowing up and social media isn't blowing up. They're very focused on business and very focused on school and family and money and all that stuff. They don't have Black Lives Matter and, you know, this the gay rights stuff. And
do you think we are riots. Do they have a gay community over there? A vocal, obvious, visible gay community? Is there like a gay section of town with gay bars?
No. But there are gay people. There's no question. You can see them all over the place. But it's technically illegal here, but it's tolerated, I guess you would say. But you know, if you were to have a gay pride parade, it would be destroyed. it wouldn't be allowed to function. It wouldn't happen. If you had a BLM type of thing here, you know, if you had some minority group that claimed that the CCP was doing this, some of that, and it tried to burn down the cities, they would be destroyed. They're absolutely destroyed. So it just doesn't happen, you know. It's a strange. It's just so different here, you know. China's not just a culture. It's not just a race. It's a civilization. It's a 5,000-year-old civilization, and so they all believe the same thing. They all think the same thing, and they're all focused on the same thing. And so they don't have the.
We don't think about China very often in this country, except for. During pandemics, they unleash in this world. But it sounds to me like, A, we should, and B, China is thinking about us. You don't have to think about China. Just know that China is thinking about you. Are they really gunning for the United States of America?
Absolutely. Boy, I think that's exactly right. So, yeah, we're not thinking about them, and that's what worries me the most. They are absolutely thinking about us, but they're not looking at us as an enemy. They're looking at us as a competitor. But they're four times the size of us, right? And they want what we have. They don't want it from us. They just want their share of it in the world, and they are focused on getting it. They are, you know, they're kids. There's no counterculture here. The kids, and they're, you know, they want their parents to be proud of them. Yeah. Average Chinese person gets married between the ages of 24 and 30. They have a child. Their grandparents are involved. It's a very conservative culture. You know, we should be thinking about, you know, English is compulsory in China. Every Chinese person, kid growing up today knows English. In American schools, I think we're still teaching French and Spanish and German, all the European languages that are going to be essentially worthless in the 21st and 22nd century. I think I was reading a statistic that only 3% of colleges in the United States teach Mandarin, and the vast majority of people who take are Chinese speakers anyways. They're just going for the easy grade. But, you know, we're going to be, our kids and our grandkids are going to be dealing with China. You're going to hear China, China, China for the rest of your lives, and it's just going to get worse. It's not going to get better. China's going to take over more and more and more and more. I mean, already 50% of the trade in Southeast Asia is done in the RMB, not the dollar, but the Chinese dollar, the RMB. It's already being done in that currency. If it continues that direction, the dollar is not going to be the trade currency of the globe. It's going to be the RMB, and that's going to spell disaster for the United States. And we're just simply getting steamrolled. We're worried about what pronouns to use. And China doesn't even know they just don't deal with any of this stuff.
No, it really is sad. We've really gotten lost in life's frivolities. Now, let me ask you this about like Taiwan. We're hearing a lot of hostile actions, saber rattling toward Taiwan. I know that China considers Taiwan theirs. It's one China, and they both have delusions of grandeur that both control the other. But is there animosity toward Taiwan? Is there a real reason to think that this is more than saber rattling, that they could be ready to do something about this? And how do they regard, last time we talked, it was the Trump presidency. Now it's the Biden presidency. What is the difference between how they are portrayed in the media, especially in regards to sort of curtailing or thwarting or possibly China's ambitions?
Well, I mean, Chinese media made fun of Trump in the superficial, like this hair and, you know, the way he spoke, all that kind of stuff. But they actually took him very seriously. They don't take Biden seriously whatsoever. You know, remember when Biden tripped up the stairs into Air Force One?
Yes.
About three or four times?
Yep.
That got so much play over it. They just laugh. All of his gaps, everything he does where he loses track and, you know, all of that stuff gets big play over here. They don't take him seriously whatsoever. But Taiwan is an interesting thing. The Chinese perspective is that, you know, that they had a civil war that ended in 1949, and you know, the Chinese government that was in charge of China, fled China's mainland and landed in Taiwan. And Taiwan is technically a part of the Fujian province of mainland China. And I don't know if people recognize this or realize this, but America has not had diplomatic relations with Taiwan for over 40 years. We recognize China. We don't recognize Taiwan. We sell them a lot of weapons, but we are not, we have no diplomatic relations. Taiwan only has diplomatic relations with 20 or 25 countries. All of them are islands like themselves, small population. So yeah, it's a lot of saber rattling. I think if China take over Taiwan, and I don't think we would do anything. I don't think the world would do anything. I think it'd be over really quickly. But I think that China would obviously get a lot of bad press. And so what they would want to do is they want to do it economically. They want to be able to make Taiwan sort of subservient to China through economics. And if they can do that, then they've sort of won the game. And that's what, do you remember the sunflower revolution that was maybe about 7 or 8 years ago? The Chinese students, the Taiwanese students, they actually recognized this pretty early. So they didn't want all these deals being secreted in Beijing and Taipei because they recognized this fact. If you were to sign these deals, you would be beholden to the Chinese government. So they put the kibosh on those deals, and that doesn't happen. And that's been to the betterment of Taiwan as far as independence. But they definitely want, before the year 2049, when modern China is 100 years old, they definitely want it in their fold. They don't want it to be independent.
It's interesting as hell, but I'm so glad I don't live there. I'm glad you do. Tell me about it. I'm glad you're able to have work. I'm sorry you can't go visit your family, but thank you for taking the time and staying up late to inform us. No problem. And I imagine now that I have your email address, I'll bother you again in the future because now you can't get away.
Sure.
Paul, thank you. Thank you so much, Paul. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Derek. Appreciate it. Anytime.
Thank you to Paul in China. I'm not using his last name, but thank you to Paul in China. I really found it absolutely fascinating. Part of me would very much like to go see China. Part of me goes, you'd get yourself into a world of trouble in China with your mouth, with your actions, with everything. And you're 6'5". You're not going to be able to hide over there. So it's probably best that you don't go to China and you just look at, like, high resolution images and pretend to be there. It's probably the best. Every once in a while, my inner monologue is on to something there. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Don't forget about the Curse Program, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Have an awesome weekend. If you're not going to be there, I'm probably going to talk about you on the weekend show. Just letting you know. We'll be back here on Monday to start it all over again. See you then. Thank you.